The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good news for Lakers fans. Anthony Davis cleared for full contact. Davis, 28, sat out of Thursday's game against the Celtics. He's unlikely to play in the Lakers' upcoming two-game set against the Jazz Saturday and Monday, according to their head coach, Frank Vogel. The coach adding, it's not out of the question for Davis to make his return against Utah. He's been out since Valentine's Day, February 14th, with a calf strain and tendonitis in his right leg. Max, what is at stake for AD without LeBron?
Well, there are a couple things. Let me say one. I always thought AD had a chance to be the greatest power forward ever, right? That's Tim Duncan. But given where the level AD was playing early in his career and how many years he'd already done that, once he started winning championships, I figure maybe he can give Duncan a run for his money. And Stephen A., I know they're not power forwards the way like Barkley or Malone were power forwards, but because they also are rim defenders, they're kind of 4-5 hybrids. But still, and Duncan, I thought, is the guy, and AD had a shot at that. Well, stuff like winning championships is really important. And if AD can't keep the Lakers afloat in LeBron's absence, that's going to be harder to do. But I think there's something more immediate in terms of, I mean, obviously there are team goals, Stephen A., but the more immediate thing for me in terms of AD, what I want to see from him, is when last seen healthy, he was the best big in the game. AD was the best big in the game. And by the way, he proved it against Jokic when Denver got past the Clippers. And Jokic is an MVP-level player last year, right? AD was better. AD's a two-way player. But something's happened since AD's been out. First of all, Jokic has raised his game. Jokic probably going to win the MVP this year. And Embiid, game for game, has been the best player in basketball this year. He's raised his game. So when AD comes back to the league, when he's getting his legs under him, his sea legs, on the way to the playoffs, hopefully staying healthy and really getting in basketball shape for the playoffs and trying to get in rhythm, it's unclear to me if he's still the best big in the game. That's what I want to see. I want to see AD come back and by the end of this season convince me that that's still the best big in basketball.
Anthony Davis, when healthy, is arguably the best big in basketball. He's certainly in the conversation. He's one of the top five players on the planet. This dude is a career 24-10 dude with nearly two and a half blocks per game. He has never, ever in his nine-year career shot worse than 49% from the field. If I have a concern about Anthony Davis, it's two things and two things only. Number one, it's his health, because he isn't considered to be the most durable person in the world. Obviously so. Number two, his three-point shooting has dipped over the last 3 years. Used to be at around 34%, went down to 33%, 32%. This season, before he got hurt, he was shooting 29% from three-point range. Okay? That has to change. He's going to have to get better in that regard because, again, you have physical big dudes in the Western Conference, and they know that's the way to get to him. Now, the best thing the Lakers could have done, you got to energize a bunny in Montrezl Harrell now as his teammate. He's no longer a Clipper. He's a Laker. But the other issue is that Andre Drummond, that's a big-time pickup because you got a big boy who's capable of throwing his body around against the Jokic's of the world and others. And so because you have that, now you have Anthony Davis being able to be a spy, helping to patrol the front court, not to mention what he brings to you offensively, and none of those dudes take away from him offensively because they're not looking for the basketball. They'll hit the boards to grab offensive rebounds, create extra possessions. They'll hit the boards on the defensive side of the ball to prevent teams from getting more than one shot, which ultimately gives you more opportunities when you get the ball on the offensive side of the ball as well. So I think we recognize this about Anthony Davis, and I think that with him and LeBron healthy, we all anticipate that they're going to the finals to face the Brooklyn Nets, even though the Philadelphia 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks swear they'll have something to say about that. I think when you look at Anthony Davis, for me, It's his health, which I'm not convinced he's fully healthy. And the other thing is his three-point shooting, because he would need to hit some of those outside shots. He can't shoot 29% from three-point range and expect the Lakers to do the kind of damage they did last year in the postseason.
Yeah, look, you're talking about what he needs to do in team goals for the Lakers, and that's really what to be concerned about right now. What I'm saying, Stephen A., is you're like, well, he's arguably the best big in basketball, certainly one of them. Yeah, no kidding, right? But is he the best? Because when he got hurt, he was the best big in basketball. If you had to, if we had to say, oh, who's been the best big in basketball last, you know, over his career, last 3 years, last 5 years, when last seen? It's AD. It was AD.
Hold on, Molly. Molly, correct. Help me out here, Molly. Am I wrong,
yeah.
Max? I never recalled you calling Anthony Davis that. I recalled saying that. I thought you said the Greek Freak, and I thought you said Joel Embiid. A matter of fact, there were you did acknowledge that Anthony Davis had a chance to be the greatest power forward that ever played basketball. But when you talked about bigs, you never had him as the best.
Well, oh, when did I this certainly news come did. Up? It's a fluid list, but I certainly did. And if it's not the best big, it's because we're defining bigs as centers who get down in the paint like Embiid. There aren't that many more of those guys really left. Giannis, at times, as you know, I had very highly rated.
No, because you had the Greek Freak, and he wasn't that dude. He was never that dude, but you had
Giannis,
the Greek Freak.
I had very highly rated, as
you
recall,
did.
And you like to remind me.
Yes, you
now,
did. Jokic and Embiid, but not the Greek
very
Freak.
Highly rated. I did think, especially after last year's playoffs, what AD and LeBron did, AD was the best big in the game. When last he's best
that.
Big in the game? Well, okay, we can go back and look. That's what I thought, if you don't remember me saying it.
No,
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah,
no.
Because Jokic and Murray got to the Western Conference Finals, where they saw LeBron and AD and showed them what the next level looks like.
Okay.
The point is, he's coming back to a league where Jokic has raised his game, where Embiid has raised his game. I'll remind you what I told you off the top of the show. Embiid's offensive and defensive ratings, plus his usage rate, if the season ended today, he would have numbers no one's ever had. The only other guys on the list with him in the top five are Michael Jordan three times and KD once. He is having a phenomenal season. He's in the best shape we've ever seen him in. He's on a team with shooters, and that's constructed to help him. And so both ends of the floor, not like Jokic where you go, yeah, offensively maybe he's the best, but what about the defense? And AD's got defense. Embiid's doing it both ends of the floor. No, I need to see AD reestablish himself as the best big in the game.
I don't disagree with you in terms of what I need to see from AD as well. But again, it's a newsflash to me that you're saying that about AD in terms of the best. Mm. But there's no question that what you highlighted about Embiid is absolutely true, because we know that Embiid does it on both ends. And if he's healthy and stays healthy and he's in shape and he continues to play the way that he's playing, we're not going to sit up there and put Anthony Davis above Joel Embiid. If Anthony Davis is shooting 29% from three-point range, his durability is a question mark, and teams are thinking that he's a bit soft and you can get to him physically. And by soft, I mean physically. I'm not talking about his heart, his guts, or anything like that. I'm just talking about his durability. If that's going to be a huge question mark, it remains to be seen what will happen.
All right. Lakers net rating falls from 14 to -4 without LeBron on the court when it's just AD. The new tagline of the show is going to be, it's fluid, and that's not okay, fellas.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The draft is less than 2 weeks away. Today in our First Take Draft Blitz, we focus on the Miami Dolphins. They pick 6th and 18th in the first round. Mel Kiper projecting the Fins to trade up to number 4 to take tight end Kyle Pitts, while Todd McShay is projecting that they will take wide receiver Devontae Smith. Max, are the Dolphins smart to build around Tua?
Yes, I think they are. I mean, look, we all saw the same thing when he was in college. He was a special talent, and it wasn't just on the field. It was his confidence on the sidelines. It's the fact that he had a kind of championship mentality. We all thought he was special. You know, I mean, by the way, Joe Burrow had a phenomenal championship game, and he wound up going one. But if not for that, you know, if there hadn't been health issues, Tua would have made a strong case for one. At any rate, there was a reason everyone believed in Tua. Did he have a rookie season that somehow suddenly disqualifies him in terms of all the belief that we had? Should we now not believe based on what we saw in his rookie season? I don't think so. I think that he looked like a rookie. He got the ball out quick when he couldn't get the ball out quick, when he had to go through his reads. He, you know, struggled as young quarterbacks do. He didn't really get the ball down the field a whole lot, but I don't think that's going to be an ongoing issue. I think that's an issue of aggression that will come, you know, as he learns what he's doing more. He looked like a rookie quarterback. Now, how did he actually do? Stephen A., his QBR, which takes into account all those traditional stats, and gives you like a real good thumbnail sketch of a quarterback and where he is, was 52.5. An average quarterback will have a 50 QBR. That doesn't mean an average starter. Average starter will be like in the mid-60s, let's say. So there's room for improvement there. But what he showed was that he's a low-end starter as a rookie who's figuring things out still. Now, where was Joe Burrow? Because before Joe Burrow got hurt, we all agreed that looks like a star. 56.2 QBR, a little higher than Tua, not a whole lot. Justin Herbert, who was amazing, right? 69.5. That's why we all think so highly of Justin Herbert. Sam Darnold, who's been in the league a while now. Now, you mentioned Adam Gase, Stephen A., and not a ton of weapons, and not had a 40 QBR, right? Well, and that kind of jives with what we saw. But so does Tua's. He's already a low average starting quarterback already as a rookie. Now, so if you believe what you saw in college, he has done nothing to disqualify that belief so far as a first year pro. Was it a slam dunk season? Oh my God, everyone was right about Tua. No, but it remains an open question, and there is reason to be optimistic. So given what you've invested in him, and they traded out of their slot because obviously they feel like they don't need a new quarterback, given the fact that you're going to build a team around him, I think, and given the fact that he was a rookie, I think I would expect improvement this season, and I would be confident that he will improve this season, and by the end of the season, Stephen A. will be a solid starting quarterback, like middle of the pack starting quarterback with the arrow pointed up.
I've got faith in Tua Tagovailoa. I wish him nothing but the best. Great kid and a lot of great ability. We saw that on a collegiate level. There were times, however, I watched him take the ball behind center, and he looked so incredibly undersized, looking over opposing defensive linemen coming his way, along with the offensive linemen blocking for him. Vision appeared to be an issue at times for me. When I look at him, I'm looking at 11 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. What did he complete? About 64% of his passes. Had a 6-3 record, something along those lines. And you're right about the 52.5 QBR. I get all of that. Here's my thing, Max. I'm willing to give him a chance and believe in him. Just tell me you're going to get him the requisite weapons, okay? Mm-hmm. because Gesicki and Parker, these brothers might, you know, may be able to play. Nobody's calling them scrubs by any stretch of the imagination, but nobody's calling them all world either. I think when we talk about, we hear about this guy Pitts out of Florida, who's your tight end, who's going to just, he's a generational kind of talent. Once in a decade that you get a talent like this playing tight end. I think that if you're the Dolphins and you really, really want to secure the future of Tua, you've got to get him weapons like that. And the reason I bring up a tight end is because you got to be somebody, you got to have somebody that's really, really reliable, particularly in short yardage situations. And that's what tight ends bring to you. Obviously, some of the great ones can extend the field. They can get down the field. They can make things happen. You know, they make plays after catches and things of that nature. But you've got to have somebody in between the numbers that you can throw the football to on a week-in, week-out basis to make sure that you, you know, basically secure, solidify your quarterback to some degree. And I think that's what Pitts brings to the table. So I'm looking at the Dolphins. Obviously, they had Gaskin as their leading rusher, which wasn't saying much last year. They need to improve their running game, no question about it. And maybe he's the answer. And you keep Parker, Kosicki, and those guys. But I think they really, really need to prioritize if you're going to have faith in Tua to go out there and get him a tight end like Pitts and see where it goes from there.
Well, that's, I mean, right. And that's why I think they're right to believe in him, because now they could not only accumulate more draft capital by trading out of the third slot, but given the needs of the other teams, it's a very high probability Pitts is there. There's a good, yeah, you know, so they can grab him. And if he's not there, then Devontae Smith's going to be there. And if he's not there, I mean, obviously Waddle could be had, and he might turn out to be the best pass catcher out of the whole group.
You're talking receivers, but you need time to get the ball to them. You don't need as much time to get the ball to your tight end.
And I think it also will open things up for the receivers for the points that you mentioned. But for all those reasons, I think the Dolphins made the right decision. I think they're on the right course, and they're live in the AFC East.
I think they'll
no question. They're seeking a 10-win season for the first time since the 2000-2001 season. So almost 20 years since they've had this type of talent. Guys, next up on our First Take Draft Blitz, Southern Steve is going to love this. Jerry's Cowboys. Should they focus on Dak and getting him some weapons, or that mediocre defense? We'll be talking Cowboys. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Maybe it surprised people that Kobe and I were very close friends. But we were very close friends. Kobe was my dear friend. He was like a little brother. Everyone always wanted to talk about the comparisons between he and I. I just wanted to talk about Kobe. What Kobe Bryant was to me was the inspiration that someone truly cared about the way I played the game or the way that he wanted to play the game. He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be. And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be.
Wow.
every time you see Vanessa Bryant, it's hard not to get choked up. Gentlemen, Michael Jordan is going to be the NBA presenter for Kobe Bryant's Hall of Fame induction. Jordan obviously spoke at his memorial service last year. You just saw a clip from that. He also will introduce Baylor's women's coach, Kim Mulkey. Stephen A., your thoughts on MJ introducing Kobe?
Well, I wasn't surprised. Knowing Kobe was going to ask him to present him anyway. So it's more than apropos that with Kobe now gone, that whether it was Vanessa, and I have no doubt that it probably was her, or somebody else contributing to it, that Michael Jordan was going to be the presenter. And, you know, the interesting part about it is that Kobe wanted to emulate him, but he also wanted to succeed, you know, and eclipse whatever Michael Jordan did if he could have pulled it off. But it was out of sheer respect, reverence, admiration, and all of those other superlatives that come along with such things. He idolized this man and what he represented to the game of basketball and beyond in so many ways. Kobe's whole thing was, whoever's the best, I want him. I want to do what they do. I just want to try and do it better. I want to strive to do it better. And I remember when Kobe and I talked one time, and Kobe was like, one of the biggest regrets I have is that Michael and I didn't play. We weren't in our primes together. He said, I'd have ate him up. And I laughed. And he said, I'm not playing. I'm serious. I would have ate him up. He know. Ask him. I told him that. And then I spoke to Michael Jordan shortly thereafter and told him what Kobe said. And Michael Jordan laughed and said, yeah. He tells me that all the time, you know, so it wasn't like Kobe was phony about it or anything like that. He just had that level of confidence that's what he believed. But he was wise enough, smart enough, brilliant enough to notice that there was so much that he could learn from a man who had preceded him in terms of hovering over the NBA with his greatness. And that was Michael Jordan. And so as Michael Jordan told everybody during the memorial service last year, he was like, hey. You know, Kobe would call him all hours of the night and the morning, asking him questions and stuff like that. Kobe was tireless about that. But what a lot of people, you know him know very, very well, he was tireless about a lot of things, even in retirement when, you know, about storytelling and about developing his companies and whatever. He was passionate about that. Last time I saw him alive, we were talking about what I was going to do on ESPN Plus, what he was doing on ESPN Plus, and how we had hoped to work together sometime in the future. Who knew what the possibilities were? And so you just remember those kind of things, and you see those kind of things that Michael Jordan is alluding to, and it just reminds you of the greatness of Kobe Bryant, who spoke at least four languages fluently. He was working on a fifth. I don't know if he had mastered Mandarin, but I know he was working on that. He was speaking German. Obviously, he spoke Italian and Spanish fluently, as well as English. He's one of the most brilliant, brilliant brothers that I had ever known, not ever met. And, you know, it's just, again, just see Michael Jordan there, and you know who he's talking about. And it's just incredibly, incredibly sad that we're sitting here in the year 2021 and Kobe Bryant is gone because of a helicopter accident. It's just devastating. And being out here in L.A., you still feel the ripple effects of Kobe's absence. Knowing that he's gone, something just doesn't feel right. Something just doesn't seem right. Even when the sun is shining and it's beautiful out here, and you saw people going to the Staples Center yesterday for games for the first time, filled to like 10 or 15% capacity, there's just something that's missing. When you go downtown, LA Live, near the Staples Center, and you know that Kobe Bryant's not coming back. It's hard to put in words.
Even when you just say that, it feels like if you could like look into the future at some bizarro universe that's never supposed to be, and hear what you just said, you say, wait, what happened? Kobe? A helicopter? It feels still surreal. In terms of Michael Jordan presenting Kobe Bryant at the Hall of Fame, that's perfect. I'm trying to think of anything that compares in American sports history. Two superstars, like Kobe. Look, Kobe's dad is Jelly Bean Bryant, right? But emotionally, psychologically, for the American sports psyche, Kobe is son of Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan came first, and Kobe is almost like a clone. They are the same height, the same size. They had the same game. Kobe's game is modeled after Jordan. Even kind of mannerisms and tone of voice and I mean, everything. It's almost even the numbers they put up, even the number of championships. Kobe, as I said, Stephen A., after this tragedy occurred, the entire world wanted to be like Mike. If I could be like Mike, that was the commercial campaign, right? Everyone, even when I was, 12 years old, my tongue's hanging out of my mouth while I'm jumping 2 inches off the ground, right? Everyone wanted to be like Mike. One man almost did it. Kobe Bryant didn't, he didn't try to zig while everyone zagged and try some asymmetrical strategy to catch Michael Jordan. No, he was like, I'm going to do Michael Jordan better than Michael Jordan. And he very nearly got there. I think about LeBron James. LeBron James, part of what makes him special is, to me, he's the first postmodern player in the sense that everyone was always trying to be Mike. And LeBron came along and, tried, it's kind of escaped the anxiety of influence. As a famous Shakespearean and literary critic, Harold Bloom, Stephen A., talked about the anxiety of influence. How after Shakespeare, every writer, because they're aware of what came before, is aware of Shakespeare and compares themselves to him. This is an oversimplification, but has this anxiety of influence. How can you escape and do something new? Well, LeBron kind of escaped the anxiety of the Jordan influence and as a result ushered in a new era. But Kobe was the one guy who accepted the challenge of the Michael Jordan influence head on and basically succeeded at it better than anyone else. It is Jordan presenting Kobe. Of course Jordan has to present Kobe. No matter what had happened with Kobe, even if Kobe was still around, who else could possibly do it? That is the lineage from Jordan to Kobe.
I don't have anything to add to that.
Yep. The only thing I just want to also say, huge congrats also to his daughter, Natalia, who got into USC. His wife, Vanessa, they were celebrating that on Instagram. So obviously an incredible school. I'm not sure if she'll attend there, but they were celebrating that and also signed a modeling contract with IMG, and they waited till she was 18 years old to do so. And she's stunning, looks just like her mother. So huge congrats to them on that as well. We'll keep it moving here, guys, and we will go to the NFL now. We'll take a look at the projected win totals for this upcoming season. So we've got all the potential winners by division, including teams that faced off in the past Super Bowl. So the Bucs are projected to have at least 11 wins, while the Chiefs are projected to have 12. Max, will the Chiefs or Bucs finish with more wins, Brady or Mahomes?
I think Mahomes. I think the answer is Mahomes, and I think the Chiefs are going to have to address their offensive line in this coming draft, and I believe they will. I mean, they're going to have to do it. The Bucs are a more well-balanced team, and Brady is still great, but Mahomes is still the best I've ever seen. Even in the Super Bowl loss, my memory of the most spectacular player on the field was Mahomes, who had no protection, was facing a great defense. Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator for the Bucs, leaves, everyone in coverage because you only have to bring four. And yet on almost all the snaps, or more than half the snaps, Mahomes is running for his life, and then everyone's also covered. And still, he did things. Like, all the plays that I remember in that game, like, oh, my God, have I ever seen that, were Mahomes. If Mahomes is protected and has a semblance of a defense, I like the Chiefs, and that goes for always. If you ask me the matchup, if you ask me the year, if you ask me, what round of the playoffs, number of wins, all that stuff, if Mahomes has an offensive line and a semblance of a defense, I think his team will always win the most.
Well, yeah, you're probably right in regards to that, because anytime you're talking about Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill having, those individuals you have to throw the ball to, particularly on any given Sunday, I think that before playoff time. They just go out there like the road runners and the elite people that they are, and they handle their business. In the case of Tom Brady, he knows about pacing, and he's willing to take some lumps earlier on to fine-tune things so he's ready when it really, really counts. So I can see that. I don't want to say taking things for granted, because I certainly am not accusing the GOAT of that. But what I'm saying is that prioritizing a little bit better than the Kansas City Chiefs have, I think definitely goes a long way. And so because of that, I think that Patrick Mahomes, combined with how he got slaughtered in the Super Bowl, I think he's going to come out this year with a vengeance. They're going to run roughshod over a lot of people during the regular season. That's not going to be a priority for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And as a result, I think the Chiefs will end up having a better record than the Buccaneers during the regular season. Doesn't mean they'll have more success in the postseason, but I do believe they'll have a better record in the regular season.
Yeah, Mahomes 38-8 in the regular season for his career.
Yep. All right, we'll keep it moving here. Now in the AFC North, guys, Baltimore projected to win the division with 11 W's, while the Cleveland Browns, who bolstered their defense, are expected to win 10 yeah. games. Stephen A., Ravens or Browns, who will have more wins in your home?
I'm rolling with the Ravens because I'm going to go on history. I'm going to go on tradition. I'm going to go on the greatness of Lamar Jackson with those wheels of his. I'm going to assume they're going to upgrade at the receiver spot during the draft. And I know that their defense is going to be there. I just think that they're more reliable, more experienced. Even though I love Stefanski and the job that he's done thus far, and he's got a lot of promise moving forward in the future, I love the job that he did. It comes down to me betting on Lamar Jackson over Baker Mayfield. That's just how I view it, and that's why I think the Ravens are going to have more wins than the Browns.
I think the Browns are going to have more wins than the Ravens, and let's not forget they both ended on 11 wins, and the reason the Ravens had 11 and the Browns weren't on 12 is because Lamar Jackson did indeed beat Baker Mayfield when they met head-to-head. That's partly because Lamar Jackson was the last guy to touch the ball. I mean, I got the feeling, had Baker been the last guy to touch the ball, the Browns would have won. It was a 50-50 kind of game. Now, what did the Browns need in the offseason, right? Well, they need their corners to get healthy, ostensibly. Their corners will be healthy. Greedy and obviously Denzel Ward should be good to go this year. They need a little safety help. They signed John Johnson. They needed another pass rusher or another guy up front. They got Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, they did pretty well in the offseason, and the draft hasn't even happened yet. By the way, they also get Odell back. And I have questions about the way Odell and Baker Mayfield will coexist. But I have to imagine, even if Odell's better off without Baker and Baker better off without Odell, or at least with the stuff they could get for Odell, I have to imagine that Odell will be additive. In other words, another crazy dynamic offensive weapon will make the team better. And so just in terms of the guys getting healthy and coming back, not to mention the free agents coming in, you look at this Browns roster, I think they've gotten better, and it was about a toss-up between them and the Browns last season. The draft hasn't happened yet, by the way. They're also going to get better in the draft. Meantime, Lamar Jackson is still looking for not just a kind of a 50-50 ball receiver who can do that at an elite level, not so easy to find. They haven't been able to find him one yet, but also another dynamic pass-catching weapon. He's a couple of dynamic playmaking offensive pieces away, I think, from really challenging for a Super Bowl. Now, I like Lamar Jackson as a quarterback a little more than I like Baker Mayfield as a quarterback, but Baker has more to work with, especially, and then you add all to all that, they had the best offensive line in football, the Browns did last year. I like the Browns.
Well, keep in mind that the Ravens have added Sammy Watkins to their squad. I don't think that he's a scrub. I think we got to pay attention to that. You still got Hollywood Brown there, and when you look at it from that perspective, I'm going to give respect where respect is due. Dobbins is no scrub running the football as well. I'm going to pay attention to that. And again, their defense, they always show up in Baltimore, and I think it's one of those situations where Cleveland is on a come up, and I'll give them a lot of credit for that, but they're not going to catch anybody by surprise, and I think people are going to be alert about them and ready to go. And I think that it ultimately does come down to Baker Mayfield. I like Clowney as an addition with Garrett on the defensive line. I see what they've done in their secondary as well. You look at what they have offensively, and whether it's Chubb or Kareem Hunt running the football, whether it's Landry or Odell Beckham Jr. catching the football, it ultimately comes down to Baker Mayfield. And when you ask me about the Ravens versus the Browns, you're asking me about Lamar Jackson versus Baker Mayfield. And I'm not going to give Baker Mayfield the edge against Lamar Jackson. I'm pleased with what I've seen from Baker Mayfield. He's improved a lot. He's validated those progressive commercials that he had. I can no longer say he has more progressive commercials than wins. I give him a lot of credit where credit is due in regards to that. But it's still not enough for me to label them as a team superior to the Baltimore Ravens in this upcoming season.
Here's the problem with the Browns now, though. As I mentioned, last year, the best offensive line, blocking for the run and protecting the passer, both. You know, it's rare that a line does both those things better than any other team in the game. So you have that kind of line, and then you mentioned it, Chubb and Kareem Hunt running the ball and catching passes out of the backfield behind that line. You can know that's coming. Good luck stopping it. Now, how do you really stop that? Well, you say, well, if the quarterback can't find targets down the field, you could stop it. But he can, Stephen A. Does he do it well enough? I think the answer is yes. He's not Patrick Mahomes, but he does that well enough. And then who's he throwing the ball to? Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry and Njoku, a couple of good tight ends. Hooper, you know, like he has guys who can catch the ball and guys who can do it at very high levels. So they can run the ball. You know that's coming. Good luck stopping it. And their dynamic on offense. That's before they made the defense. Again, coming into the season, they need some depth at quarterback. They could use a safety. They could use a defensive end. They got all those things except the cornerback already. The draft hasn't happened yet. I expect the Browns to be Super Bowl contenders.
What did you say 2 years ago when they had Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield together? What did you predict for the Browns?
I thought that this would be the case then, and Freddie Kitchens was not the man for the job.
Okay. Oh, it's that simple, huh?
But do you think the current coach is Stephen A?
I think he's got potential. I think he's a significant upgrade to Freddie Kitchens. But I think you had the Browns going to the AFC Championship game that year, didn't you?
Why are you bringing up old stuff? Always 2 years ago.
Did they even make the playoffs?
I'm going to start remembering your bad predictions and throwing them at the playoffs?
That's not your bad prediction. Don't even go there with that. That is not your bad prediction.
Yes, it is, Molly, and I don't know what you're talking about.
That's not the worst prediction
Whatever. Of course it is. That's
all I know is I'm dying over here with my allergies, so don't even worry. I can't even hear anything. Call me when there's a vaccine for pollen, because I'm literally dying right now. All right, let's go to America's teams. So the Cowboys and Patriots, both projected to have 9 wins. Max, who's going to have more wins? Is it the Cowboys? Remember, they have their quarterback, Dak Prescott, back, or the Patriots, who we don't know who they have. Cam, Stidham, maybe they're going to draft one.
The Patriots are going to have more wins. The Patriots had 7 wins last year with a brand new quarterback coming off a catastrophic injury, having a bad season by the end of the season, partly because coming off the catastrophic injury, coming into a completely different situation and system with a brand new coach and all that. It was also a COVID year. No practice, no preseason, none of that stuff. And then he himself got COVID, Cam Newton. And they had to shut down the facilities, and it affected them. Still won 7 games. And those weren't gimme games they won. They won against a bunch of quality teams. They had quality wins, and a couple of plays away from winning 9 games, right? The Seattle game, goal line stand, and the Buffalo game. Stripped Cam, you know, in the red zone. Not for those 2 plays. They have 9 wins. And Stephen asked before Cam knew what he was doing. And that's before Bill Belichick spent all this money in free agency. That was 7 wins. Let's talk about Dak and the Cowboys. Last time I saw Dak complete a healthy season, he was totally excellent. And they won 8 games and couldn't even win the division. It's one of the worst divisions you ever want to see. I like the Patriots to win more games than the Cowboys this upcoming season.
Let's go 7, Steve.
Believe it or not, I'm going to go with the Cowboys. Part of it is because they're playing in the NFC East. Obviously, the Philadelphia Eagles, I don't know what the hell's going on with them. The Washington Redskins, even though Fitzpatrick is there, they still got a questionable offense. I don't know if it's going to be there or Mr. Muffler himself, Taylor Heineke. Or, you know, you look at, I'm just looking at it at the New York Giants. I like Joe Judge. I like the job that he's done. I love the fact that Saquon Barkley is going to be back. Daniel Jones, can he hold on to the football? Can he prevent himself from turning the football over? With Dak, with Ezekiel Elliott, with a 3-headed monster in CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, Amari Cooper as your wideouts. I expect their offense to be prolific. I expect their defense to be improved because it can't get any worse. And I definitely think they're playing in the NFC least. That definitely is going to help them. But here's the other point, and I have to confess, most of it is emotional because we all understand I don't want the Dallas Cowboys to stink up the joint early. I want them to tease everybody into believing they're going to be relevant. That's what I need. I need people out there thinking that the Cowboys are going to do something, okay? And that way when they fall, see, if you fall from the curb, it don't hurt that much. But if you fall from a building, it hurts a hell of a lot more. You know, assuming you survive.
What is wrong
I want the Dallas Cowboys. I want the fans for the Dallas Cowboys. I want the plummet to be severe. I want it to hurt. I don't want it to be something they see coming. I don't want it to be one of those situations where they look at it and they like, you know what? This happens. I mean, this is not our year. No. I want it to be one of those situations where they come crashing down, where they talk and smack Thanksgiving and Christmas. They don't mind opening their presents this time around.
Then
they crash. That's what I want.
You know what, Molly?
They crash. That's what I want.
He's like sick and twisted. What happened to you as a kid? Were you tortured? Go ahead, Max.
There is a story about that. We'll get to that in a second. But just to torture the metaphor, Molly, Stephen A., you call Cowboys fans roaches. I've heard you do it. Those cockroaches.
Call them what?
Roaches.
Cockroaches. Yeah,
right?
I said they're like cockroaches. A nuclear bomb can drop, and they'll a Cowboy fan will come out. Trust me.
That's the thing.
You understand? They'll survive.
You ain't going to hurt them. You ain't going to hurt the Cowboys fans because as soon as they lose, what are they going to be talking about? Oh, we're going to get them next year.
Yeah,
oh,
I know.
Here it comes.
I know.
You're only going to hurt them so much.
But I'm going to do what I did when they lost to the Rams a couple of years ago. They came back to the JW Marriott, and I was there greeting them. Don't you want to take a picture? Don't you want to hang out? I mean, I was right there at the hotel lobby.
You did a meet and greet with the cockroaches.
Molly, it's a true story.
After they fell off the building and crashed.
It's a true story,
you set up a
Molly.
Table. You had balloons.
Are you listening to me, Molly?
And you were like, listen, cockroaches, come to me.
Are you listening to me, Molly? I'm trying to tell you something. I was in the hotel lobby at the JW Marriott waiting for them, and they got back, and I was volunteering to take pictures, shake their hands, and all of that stuff. I loved it because they were running. They were scurrying away from me. I've never seen Cowboy fans scurry away from me that. It was beautiful. So I've realized all I need to do is be in attendance for when they lose come playoff time, and that way I'll be right there to greet Dallas Cowboy fans. It would be a beautiful thing.
I'd like to put the witness on the stand, if I may.
Sure.
Stephen A. Smith, is it or is it not true that you once had your heart broken by a Cowboys fan?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Where is she now?
Who knows? Who cares? Long time ago.
You clearly care. You're the one with the pain
the time,
still in your heart.
At the
You're
time,
still bothered
at the,
by it. Maybe
at
she's
time,
moved on.
At the time, well, she moved on. I think it's clear to say I clearly have moved on. I'm living well. You know, life is good. I'm chopped
straight.
Listen,
producers are in my ear telling me to move on to sports, but I'd prefer to talk about this.
I was in high school. You know what you want me to say?
And yet the emotional scar remains, Molly.
Hold hands down the hallways.
That's the emotional scar remains. It's like a comic book villain. Where did it come from, this hatred of Superman Lex Luthor, right? Where did it come from, Stephen A.? He has an origin story about his hatred for the Cowboys.
But I've dated since that time, and a couple of ladies I dated were Cowboy fans, but they had to go the minute I found out they loved the Cowboys. They had to go.
They scurried like cockroaches. They're not invited to your meet and greets at the JW Marriott. I'm dead. It's a beautiful mind. I needed a good laugh. All right, guys, let's go to Steph Curry. Steph Curry with the shot. Scores over 30 again, 33 points Thursday night in a victory at Cleveland. He's got the chance to tie Kobe on this list in the Warriors' next game, which is 8:30 p.m. Eastern Saturday at Boston on ABC for most consecutive 30-point games over the age of 33. So I asked you guys earlier, you had started, Stephen A., is Steph Curry the best point guard in the NBA? You brought up a comparison with Magic Johnson, and Max, I think you took issue with that. Would you like to expound, sir?
Well, I mean, the game changes. So when you talk about the way the game is played now, Magic couldn't shoot like Steph, obviously. As Stephen A., you pointed out many times, no one could ever shoot like Steph. Right. And so you say, oh, well, we're shooting like that, you know. But the bottom line is Magic Johnson won 5 championships, was one of the greatest players of all time, is a 6'9 point guard who was one of the most clutch players of all time. As a 20-year-old, he entered the league as a 19-year-old. As a 20-year-old, so he turned 20 later in the season, he jumped at center when Kareem went out in the finals in game 6.
Against Caldwell Jones. Daryl Dawkins.
I thought it was Dawkins. Yeah, right. And gave him 42-15 and won the championship. As a 20-year-old, by the way, Stephen A., throughout his career, he became a much better player than that. So, yes, Steph can shoot the lights out, no doubt. But I cannot put him ahead of Magic Johnson on the all-time point guard list just because he can shoot? No.
Well, listen. I'm viewing it a little bit differently, and I'm not trying to go that far, because when you talk about the point guard, you're talking about a quintessential leader, which I believe Magic Johnson is. Steph Curry can't touch him in that category. The passing ability of Magic Johnson at 6'9", being able to see over everybody and what he can do, you know, bringing Showtime to the NBA, always a fast break. But you know what? It also helped that he had Worthy and Byron Scott and Michael Cooper and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar once you went to the half-court set. You know, the list goes on and on. What I'm trying to say to you is this. Just use your imagination for a second. It's not just that Steph Curry can shoot the basketball from anywhere. That's not just it. It's the fact that you have to guard him from the moment he gets past half court because he's a threat, so you have to extend the defense. Then you have to pay attention to the fact that he moves so well without the basketball, that he's a nightmare because he keeps defenses' heads on a figurative swivel because they constantly got to look to see where he is. You can see teammates having wide open shots, and they don't think about shooting the ball if Steph Curry is open because you know he's money. All I'm saying to you is when you bring that kind of exceptional marksmanship to the game, it brings a different element, the likes of which we have not seen, and forces us to consider a lot of things. And all I would say is this, Max, without giving a definitive answer about Steph to Magic Johnson, because back in the old days it would be Magic, in today's game it would be Steph, here's what I would say to you. That comparison or that question isn't far-fetched if we're going to look at LeBron and ask similar questions about him in comparison to Jordan, when you consider what Jordan had to endure, how physical the game was, which is what Rasheed Wallace alluded to when he came on the air the other day. And, oh, by the way, he came on when it was physical. He's talking about the 90s. He ain't talking about the 80s when Jordan was playing, when it was even more physical. Yet in LeBron at 6'9", 260, when we look at the game today and you can get thrown out of the game for sneezing in the wrong direction, for crying out loud, the game is considerably softer compared to what it used to be. But we bring up that comparison, so why can't we do that when it comes to Steph Curry and Magic?
Magic Johnson is a 3-time finals MVP. You know, wake me up when Steph wins finals MVP one time. And don't tell me about Kareem and Worthy when Steph just played on a team with KD and Klay.
Greatest
Draymond
shooter
and
God ever created. Period.
I'm going to go scurry like a cockroach. I'll be back on Monday. Hope you guys have a great weekend.